Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal, and I'm here today with Bruce McCurdy. Welcome, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing?
All right, all things considered.
Well, we got some really good news yesterday. It looks like, and today, that McDavid's knee didn't get Bobby Orr'd. His leg seems to be okay. And that was what I was hoping, you know, because when I watched the incident initially, and when I, then they quickly showed Steve Stamkos injury. And I also recalled the Taylor Fadun one. And there was a real difference in the McDavid one that I was hopeful there'd be a positive outcome. You know, you never know. But he just went in there hard, but there was no twisting or kind of churning of the knee. It just was a hard, really, really hard smash on the knee. And no wonder McDavid said that he felt his leg was broken too. But the Stamkos one, there was a real twisting of the knee. And the same with the Fadun, there was that real twisting. And of course, Sekera got hit on the side of the knee. So there was none of that, and I was hopeful this was just like a really deep bone bruise, and maybe that's what it's going to turn out to be. The early indications are that that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, it's a huge relief for sure. I mean, on Saturday, I'm sure that I was a long way from the only Oilers fan that had my heart in my throat. I mean, McDavid went down early in the second period, and if my wife and I said 10 words to one another for the whole rest of the broadcast, that was probably about the maximum. We were just sort of sitting there in glum silence. And we've been enjoying the game up to that point. And it just took all the life right out of the game. And it just seemed like, you know, of all the crappy ways for a crappy season to wind up, what could be crappier than this? So to get any kind of good news that's not, nothing's broken or torn or shredded or mangled or amputated, you know, it's all great. So what a relief to get that news.
Now, I don't know if viewers can see this, but I have in memoriam of Howie Morenz here. This is my Howie Morenz bolo tie. And I'm wearing it because McDavid's injury just brought back Howie Morenz. Now, if you look at closely at our Cult of Hockey logo or one of them, there's Paul Henderson Gretzky and there's Howie Morenz in it. And Morenz, of course, I don't know if you can see this. He died. There's a broken heart there. He died of a broken heart after he injured his leg and could no longer play hockey. That's the legend of Howie Morenz. And he was the greatest player of his time. And a player who stylistically, Bruce, sounds exactly like Connor McDavid of his day.
He was faster than everybody else.
That's right. This lightning bolt up the ice. You know, I don't see McDavid, like, he doesn't remind me at all of Gretzky in this, really at all. He reminds me of Mike Modano in the modern era. Just this unbelievable, like a better, like Mike Modano was a great player, but slightly, you know, a better version of that player. Faster version. But that's who he reminds me most stylistically. Or Bobby Orr. He reminds
Bobby
me
Orr at center. Him. I've always liked your comparison to him as Bobby Orr at center.
Yeah.
And Howie Morenz had two nicknames, the Stratford Streak and the Mitchell Meteor. They both communities tried to claim him as their own, and of course alliteration was the means of the day. So I don't know that McDavid has accumulated any nicknames of quite that ilk, but he's
I like my old managing editor Murdoch Davis, or my old editor calls him McGod quite a bit. McGod. So Bruce, there was even more good news from McDavid, because so there was the rumors out of Toronto, or not rumors, but speculation. There was a Toronto sports writer who was kind of, he was just, to give him credit, it's Justin Bourne. He makes a lot of smart commentary on hockey, and he might've just been having some fun on a Toronto broadcast, not realizing that, you know, this was going to get back to Edmonton, but you know, he was talking about how gleeful he would be essentially.
Yeah.
Laugh. And that was,
hoping it would happen. I thought that was in poor taste.
It really was. It really was. And, you know, because he's not, if you're a Leafs fan, I can see you saying that. Like, we are Oilers fans, so we actually might wish, but he's supposed to be like a commentator, like not a fan. And it just seemed a little bit, it was kind of, no, I didn't like it at all. Anyway, so there's been lots of this Steve Simmons and, you know, Elliot Friedman has also talked about in 2 years, if things don't turn around, he could see McDavid wanting out. So it was just really interesting because this came up. And again, McDavid talked about how frustrated he was after the Oilers got eliminated. And that was blown out of proportion by people like Bourne. So here's what McDavid said, Bruce. Let's just go through his quotes. And here's what McDavid said. Lots has already been said about what I said in Vegas, but I'd be a complete loser if I wasn't frustrated. You know, it's frustrating personally. It's frustrating as a group. We want to be in the playoffs. We want to be competing late in the season. That's not where we're at. So we got some stuff to figure out. Like I said, that's not rubbing anyone's nose in anything. That's just simply the facts. We're going to get it right. I know Bob is on a mission to right the ship here, and I'm confident he will. And then he shot down the trade rumor, or the, you know, asking out rumor. And he said, I want to be here. If I didn't want to be here, I wouldn't have signed an 8-year deal. I love the guys and the city. There's obviously going to be changes both on and off the ice, and that's just the facts of it. But I am here to be part of the solution. That's that. So Bruce, I don't think he could have said something that would be more heartwarming and welcome from fans of the Edmonton Oilers. But you know what else, Bruce? Completely not unexpected for him to say that.
Of course not.
Completely not unaccepted. And I think that the people who like, people seem to see McDavid in a way that he isn't. I don't know what they're projecting, but they kind of see him as this fragile victim almost, who doesn't, you know, who's oppressed here in Edmonton, who doesn't have any agency to change things. And he's just going to, you know, he's going to want the first ticket out of town because he can't do anything about it. And that is the last person on earth who Connor McDavid is. He's this committed, fierce guy, this fierce competitor who's also really loyal. And it didn't mean nothing to him to sign that 8-year deal. It meant something. It doesn't mean nothing to him to be the team captain. These are all hugely significant things for Connor McDavid in his life. And he takes them seriously. He takes his commitment seriously. Everything about him screams that of commitment, seriousness, focus, determination. So these people who thought, oh, he's just, you know, he's poor Connor, blah, 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 blah. Well, come on. Of course, he's someone who faces adversity and is determined to overcome it. And, you know, outside fans may think it's not fair that he's here, that he has to put up with it, but life's not fair. And he is getting, as he said, $10 million a year. $12.5 million a year, $100 million.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, life ain't fair, but he's getting paid a lot for that kind of unfairness. And anyway, and he realizes that. He's not some idiot snowflake.
No, well, I mean, he's invested.
Bruce, are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, well, what happened there, do you know?
I'm not entirely sure. My screen just died on me for a second. Was I in mid-rant?
You were in mid-rant. So we lost about this broadcast live. So there's a 30-second break there, but we'll just continue on. Sorry about that.
My bad. I don't know what happened with my computer. Anyway, I was ranting about the people. Many, many people are saying McDavid should just leave Edmonton and should ask for a trade. He should get the hell out of there.
Oilers fans too saying it.
I don't think many of them think like Connor McDavid, right? Like if he had a loser attitude of it's never my fault and it's I deserve better, I belong out of here. I don't think he would have gotten to where he's gotten. No. And people projecting what they think he should do with what he is actually thinking in his own champion's mind are going to be two different things. And I'm frankly sick of hearing about it, not just from Justin Bourne and not just from broadcasters, but from people in general. He's going to own this. I mean, this is the challenge is on him to pick this team. And obviously he's doing the best he can. And obviously the team behind him needs to do better. And there may come a day where if they don't, then there'll be a reckoning. But we are far, far, far from that day. 1 year into an 8-year, $100 million contract.
It is a little frustrating.
I just get sick of it.
And a lot of it comes out of Toronto. And I don't know. I just, you know, those guys in Toronto, like they're plugged in, some of those media guys, and you just wonder, like, what are they hearing? Maybe they're hearing, like, maybe there's someone within the McDavid circle who's griping and groaning and making noise, and maybe that's where a little bit of it's coming from. You, like, no one ever, you know, when these rumors are spread, no one ever says directly, okay, where are you hearing that from? Right. Like with the hockey insiders, we always just let them off the hook. And I guess it's not like anything hangs on it. There's nothing huge hangs on it, but they tell the rumors and they tell us what they think and they speak authoritatively. And we never say, okay, where'd you get that from? How do you know that? We never ask them that. I never asked them that either. So I'm just saying, but it's a little frustrating in this regard, because there seems to be some fairly authoritative kind of statements that if it's, you know, in a year or two that he'll ask out if things don't improve.
Well, here's some pushback for you. McDavid specifically mentioned he wouldn't have signed here for 8 years if he didn't believe that this was the place he wanted to be. Was that a snide reference to guys like, say, Austin Matthews only signing for 5 years when he could have signed for a maximum of 8 years like McDavid did? Just saying.
Yeah. Alrighty. So, Bruce, of course, McDavid is frustrated.
Well, I would hope so. I'd be pissed right off at him if he wasn't.
Exactly. And so today we had the latest Bob Nicholson show, year-end press conference, where he said zilch, as far as I could tell. But it was interesting because we got to see a little bit of Keith Gretzky. I don't know if he's seen a lot of Keith Gretzky. I can't write. Like, he's done a few interviews. And he came across, I would say this, that he didn't say a lot, but he said one thing, which I really liked. When he was, you know, what's the problem with the team? First thing out of his mouth wasn't, oh, it's lack of character, like Nicholson had said in his press conference, which just drove everybody crazy. Because that's what we've been hearing for a decade, is that there's a lack of jam. They need more grit. It's all about the character. That's all you hear. So what Gretzky said, which was welcome, was it's about speed and skill, and we've got to get more of it. Yeah. It's just so utterly apparent. Frankly, we didn't hear that from Ken Hitchcock a lot that year. Like, we need more talent on this team. He was a, like, culture guy. And I guess that's what he controls. He doesn't control the skill level on his team necessarily, although he did, you know, he was party to Caleb Jones, you know, Manning staying in the lineup, Petrovic staying in the lineup, Caleb Jones down in the minors. So I don't know. But anyway, it was great to hear Gretzky say that. And I'm going to go on a limb, although a lot of people are totally sour on the guy, fair enough, because of the old boys club connection, which is real enough, that the average fair-minded Oiler fan will have a better impression of Keith Gretzky after that press conference now than they had before. Yes or no, Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He came across as a reasonable, thoughtful individual. I don't think he said anything that was outrageous. I thought he focused the conversation more in directions that it should be focused, like you said, speed and skill. I like that he referenced analytics on a couple of occasions and sports science and those sorts of things that the organization has been reluctant to really delve into, or they tried it and they got rid of all the guys that were involved in it. You know, they got a lot of catching up to do in areas like that. I like that Gretzky was open about his interest in the job, but he didn't say, well, if I don't get it, I'm out of here. He one comment he said was the new GM, whoever it is, when they were talking about amateur prospects. He said, I expect the new GM, whoever it is, will come to me or whoever it is for advice. So accepting the possibility that he'll still be in a subordinate role to that guy and sort of keeping the options, not just the options, but the appearances that he just doesn't assume that he's the guy and that's that. So I thought he came across pretty well.
I like that he didn't oversell it, Bruce. He wouldn't talk about his plan. Like, he didn't come out with, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, I'm going to change it. It was like a real, like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I have a few ideas. I'm not going to tell you my plan. Like, good for him. Like, he didn't oversell himself. He didn't thump his own chest.
It was already marginally inappropriate that Nicholson was there with one of the candidates to be the GM. Now, I guess in theory, you're talking about the acting GM who talks about the season just passed.
Yes.
But it's kind of a quicksand area. I was a little bit, Nicholson could have done it on his own. One thing that caught my ear from Nicholson's point of view is it sounds like it's a GM-only search. It's not anything to do with the Poho, and he clearly was sort of reestablishing his own territory as being the CEO and in charge of the hockey side.
Yeah, Nicholson should not be in charge of the hockey side at all, Bruce.
Yeah, well, he talked about hiring hockey people and so on. And honestly, David, it came across to me as I know a thing or two about hockey, about hiring, if there was ever a concern like that. That was really the way that one landed.
Here's why I'm skeptical of Nicholson. Okay, first of all, the hiring process on his first hire. Second of all, his job resume. He was never an NHL executive. He was an amateur hockey executive, never ran an NHL team. Third of all, some of his comments, like especially after the Shirelli firing, where he said he was going to do a deep dive into his own organization, which he'd been running for years. He should know that.
Mm-hmm.
That was real. And then the Reeder thing, where he just threw a player under the bus. And I'm sure upset player, like his own team, including players like McDavid. I wouldn't be surprised. Like McDavid being a loyal guy and a fierce leader of that group. How do you think he'd take that? I mean, that was a big mistake by Nicholson. I have not a lot of confidence in Bob Nicholson. And I think whoever is the new GM should be the president of hockey operations. Like Nicholson's job is to be the businessman. And the guy who's running hockey operations, if it's not a totally separate person, it's going to be the GM. And that person answers to, he's accountable to Nicholson. And it's not like Nicholson's in on the decisions and then is accountable to himself. No, the hockey ops guy, Nicholson should fire that guy if he's not doing his job. But if he is that guy, it's harder to fire that guy and to do that. So no, there's got to be a buffer between Tate's hockey operations. That's Nicholson, but Nicholson, he shouldn't be hockey operations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's possible that he's not filling that job because the new GM will want to be that job. He'll want like Shirelli. And I also think to Nicholson's credit, he said the new GM like Shirelli will have full authority. I think that's proper for the GM to have full authority, for Nicholson to not have that authority, or Cates, that should be vested in the hockey operations and the person running the team. So he's getting a few things right, but his track record is checkered, and I would be more comfortable if someone else is making the decision. He's making it. That's what we're facing here. And he just better get it right.
I was at the fateful breakfast meeting with the season ticket holders where he made the unfortunate comments about Toby Reeder, which was in specific answer to a question about the plan and what went wrong with the plan. And he focused it all on the free agent signing that didn't work out. I will say that he was a lot more composed and had, I think he was maybe tired that time because he'd done a whole bunch of them in a row. But this morning, I thought he had his words together. He didn't have marbles in his mouth. He came across like an executive.
Well, Tim Shipton probably this morning. Okay, we're going to have a press conference here, Bob. So the Oilers, like lead public relations guy, probably asked him every tough question they could think of. And Nicholson this morning, to get him ready for it.
Well, they seemed a little more prepared. Yeah, let's put it that way. And so that said, all that talk about plan, I mean, Keith Gretzky mentioned it twice, but both he said, I do have a plan. I'm not going to tell you what it is. Why would I? But Nicholson would, two or three times he went back to this. Well, we're going to have a plan. And I'm sorry, we heard this last year. And we heard, we've heard a few of these things before. And granted, there's more urgency. I like the fact they at least talked about more openness and communications within the organization and outside. I thought that was an appropriate thing to say.
That's interesting what you're saying about the plan. I think, from watching the season, how the season unfolded, I think Shirelli had a plan. And I think it might have been on some level to move a little bit away from heavy hockey. Like, so they drafted Yamamoto, they drafted Evan Bouchard, a highly skilled hockey player. I think Shirelli always wanted Puljujärvi in the lineup. I think he wanted, when he traded Strom, I think they wanted Marodi in the lineup. I've heard that as well. So I think that Shirelli was probably wanting to get that, like, push the timeline on getting these skilled players. I heard he wanted Bouchard to stay. And again, this is, you know, this isn't solid stuff, but these are things that, you know, you hear, you can't even remember where, but you read it on Twitter somewhere. Anyway, I think Shirelli's plan was to start pushing for more skill, but it just wasn't ready yet this year was his problem. And it was the right idea. And it's the continuing idea. Although then he backed away from it. He hired a heavy hockey coach in Hitchcock. And when he made a trade, he was replacing people on defense, he brought in heavy hockey players and Manning and Petrovic instead of Puckmovers.
And talked about how we need to break the cycle in the defensive zone as if that was the be-all and end-all that he needed from his defenders. That happened after the San Jose blowout loss right after Christmas on home.
That might have been coming right from Hitch, though, like right from Hitchcock, who was really, really pretty pleased with those trades, especially the Manning trade, as I recall. He didn't know Petrovic. But anyway, so it was a bit of a mission. The plan turned out to be a hash because the skill players, if that was the plan, they weren't ready. It was a year, at least a year too early for this new wave of skill to hit. And, hey, Bruce, I want to go over one thing Hitchcock said in the closing interview. Drysdale. Hitchcock was asked specifically where he thinks Drysdale is best off. And he just unequivocally, no doubt about it, said it at center. Which was really interesting because he had played him so much on the wing with McDavid. Right. And you know, you'd think, you know, he must think that Drysdale and McDavid are the answer, but which is interesting. But you can see how pragmatic coaches have to be, I think. You know, they're solving the problem of the day, of the moment, but what really they think, and this might have been the case with McClellan, really he thought deep down, McDavid and Drysdale, we got to get Leon going at center, but we can't do it right now. So it was really interesting to me to hear Hitchcock say that. I completely 100% agree with him.
Well, Leon,
the future of this team is Leon leading his own line and
Leon's leading his own line. Prototypical center, in my view, real puck distributor. And so, I mean, he can play the sidekick role to a T, as we've seen with his shooting ability and ability to get open and unload that one timer. But you can do that from the center position as well. Ask Phil Esposito about that. You can also, but I see him as, you know, the guy in the middle of the ice as a natural distributor and joiner of the play. But geez, get him a couple of wingers that belong somewhere near the top six, right? I mean, what in the hell are you going to do when you have? I mean, a lot this year he played with Reeder and Chiasson. Reeder scored zero goals, and Chiasson was a PTO sort of last resort signing. And he had a good year, but don't confuse him with the top six player.
I think they're going to have to. I don't know how they're going to do it, Bruce. And they may just decide to go with the demon that they have and hope that, the strategy might be like, can they move out Russell? Maybe not. Probably not, I'm guessing, unless they eat something, and I don't think they will. Can they move out Matt Benning to make room? They can, but it's debatable whether you want to do that. So I see them going with seven D-men next year, one of them being Caleb Jones or Evan Bouchard or Ethan Bear. And maybe the seventh D-man, the player sitting, if he's not injured, will be Russell, or maybe the player sitting will be Benning. And that's how they're going to add some skill. They're going to add Jones or Bear to the lineup. But they do need, I don't think there's enough wing prospects that they can get by without actually adding a scoring winger. So I think they need two things in the offseason, another goalie to challenge for Koskinen. So they're in the same position they've been in like before they brought in Talbot and then before they brought in Koskinen to challenge Talbot. They're in that position again where they need to bring in a goalie who's a serious challenger for Koskinen. That's job one. And job two is a winger, another winger, who can play. Because I think that there's enough other candidates. I think, four really good young candidates in Marodi, Benson, Yamamoto, and Puljujärvi, that they're going to get two of those guys in the top nine from those four. But they're going to have to bring
in one last year.
That is what we said last year, but they're all – there's different evidence this year that, one of them last year we were hoping for was Ty Ratty, and there was some evidence to have hope there, I think, real evidence. But they're going to – have to bring in one winger this year to play with Drysdale, so they can have him at center.
That's what they did last year. But, you know, the trouble was we went into July 1st last year with very little cap space. And so they had to pick bargains off the pile. They signed Kyle Brodziak for $1.15 million. They signed Toby Reeder for $2.0 million. They signed Kevin Gravel for $700,000. That's what they did last July 1st. Now, how many of those guys really moved the needle here? I'd say none. And whereas other teams with a bit more room, I mean, Calgary, they were looking for a 3C. They spent $2 million extra on Derek Ryan, but they got a good contributing positive player who could score points, who could play two-way hockey. And, I mean, maybe you could say, well, the Oilers, instead of signing the two guys, should have just signed the one and gone after Derek Ryan. I mean, there's always – but the fact was that there was no way they were going to get a high-end winger with the $2 million that they gave Toby Reeder. Just –
too bad they didn't have that $5 million gap, Bruce, because then they could have signed James Neal.
Well, there's that. I mean, Calgary's got – almost every team has at least one albatross on the payroll somewhere, almost every team, right? So when I hear this general talk that as long as Lucic is an Oiler, they're doomed or something, that's not true. What you can have is a whole bunch of them, and what you really can have is not enough bargain contracts, and that's where the Oilers really come up short. They have nothing in the entry level. Like, literally, they had zero entry level contracts playing in the last 6 weeks of the season after Puljujarvi went down and out. Zero. And you look at all the contending teams, and they got 3 or 4 or 5 entry level contracts on there, and yet we have the Oilers saying, their new mantra, we're going to over-ripen all of these players. If we think they're ready, we're going to make them wait another half year or whatever. And how about ripen? How about when they're ripe? Get them in there. I mean, I look at Tampa Bay on Saturday, and they had like 4 or 5 ELC guys on there. But the thing is, when Edmonton, if they do put an ELC on their contract, he's never in a third or fourth line role. He's never on the third pairing. He's in the top six. He's in the top four. You know, they Justin Schultz him, or they Ryan Nugent Hopkins him, or they, you know, even Caleb Jones when he cut up here. Right away, he got banged into a high expectations ice time role. And when you look at some of these other teams that are doing it right, you see these young guys that are in support roles for cheap, that are learning and are going to get better. But it's not like you're heaping a mound of expectations on these fellows.
You know, so if the Oilers, I think they can, for cheap contracts next year, I think they can probably count on one of Gambardelli, Russell, or Curry on their fourth line. Mm-hmm. They can count on two of Yamamoto, Puljujärvi, Marody, and Benson on their third line. And that should be the mindset going in. We're going to two out of those four, and one out of those three, or maybe two out of the three, are going to be making the team. And that's how we're constructing our team. We're going to leave these spots open. There's going to be competition because those guys are competing with each other.
With each other, yeah. I was just going to say, the assumption can't be we're keeping a spot open for this guy, Jesse Puljujärvi, or whoever it is, but that you have some redundancy so that you have like four guys, as you say, competing for one or two spots with each other. But this idea that they have to be 24, 25, 27 years old, you know, the three youngest guys on the Oilers were Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Darnell Nurse.
See, this is the
one, two, three on the team in ice time. Like, they had the highest, and now largely they're up to it. But the fact remains that there was no role for younger players playing a significant, you know, but bottom of the lineup depth player position. Yeah. There's nobody in there.
I want to see them bring in a coach who's willing to go with younger players, play them in their proper roles, and, you know, not have, you know, the heavy hockey, veteran hockey that we saw. You know, there's a lot of questioning. Do they make the right choice in fire McClellan now? He just got hired in LA. You know, I still think they made the right choice. The team was going nowhere under him. He had a healthy Klefbom and Russell, and the team was going nowhere. So I think it was they needed a second opinion on that roster. We needed to know, can a different coach get more out of this roster? And for a while, Hitchcock did until there was the two injuries. So, but I'd like to see a coach who's willing to go. And I don't think it's Woodcroft. I don't think he's ready to be an NHL coach. He's been a head coach. This will be just his first year. Now, you could take that risk possibly if he wins the AHL championship. You never know what's going to happen. That's what happened with George Brunetta. He won the AHL championship and he got the Oilers job. But I don't think it's going to be Woodcroft. But I do want to see a coach who wants to play a skill puck moving game, and is willing to go with some younger players in your third line and bottom pairing on defense, at least.
It's not like all these older guys got the job done.
It's not like Lucic earned his ice time. I mean, he had the third most ice time of any winger, full-time winger on the team. If you're going to have that, you're going to lose. And it's, if you're interviewing the coach, you'd say like, okay, how are you going to convince Milan Lucic to take fourth line minutes? One of the questions you have to ask.
You're going to pay the guy and you're going to say, you do what we tell you to do. That's what you're going to do.
You're such a hard ass, Bruce.
Well, I mean, he's making $6 million a year. And I mean, if he's not going to deliver on the production side of things, then he's going to have to be prepared to accept the fact that his role is going to diminish. I think he did accept that as this year went on. And we saw a lot of him in the bottom six and even on the fourth line.
So let's finish off with this, Bruce. I did a post earlier today. I was doing the power rankings, which I've done for 4 years now. And I rate every month the Oilers players on their performance and give them a ranking. And McDavid and Draisaitl of the last 2 years have been first and second. The year before that, though, Cam Talbot was second overall in the power rankings behind Connor McDavid. And last year, I think he slipped his...
Was that before or after the playoffs after that you did that?
After he was number one, I had ranked him at the time number one in the playoffs, number one player, and at that time, the following year, he had a .919 save percentage that year. Next year, it dipped to .908.
Yep.
And I think he ranked eighth, and they brought in Koskinen because of that to challenge him. And this year, I think it dropped to like .893 or .892, and he finished, I think, 11th or 12th on the power rankings. He had a few good months. He was up and down, Talbot, this year. But really, when you look, if you're looking for the main cause of the Oilers not performing in terms of on-ice performance, Bruce, I think it's the goaltending play of Cam Talbot. You know, they were counting on him to be the Cam Talbot of 2016-17. The last 2 years, he's never been that again. Now, there's all kinds of reasons and theories for that, but that's the bottom line is Cam Talbot just never got his game together, and it really had an adverse effect on the Edmonton Oilers.
So and, to paraphrase Bob Nicholson's comments on Reader, if Cam Talbot had only got 10 or 12 more shutouts, the Oilers would probably be in the playoffs.
They would be, actually, if he got 10 or 12 more shutouts. Cam Talbot's play was far more significant than Toby Reader's play. In terms of the Oilers not being a playoff contender. And now you could say his play is a reflection of team defense, more chaotic shots, more chaotic chances. It's a reflection. There's all kinds of reasons for it, like overuse the previous 2 years. But, man, he and then in Koskinen and in stretches, those two guys, they didn't make a save. They let in a lot of weak goals, and it really killed the Oilers this year. And next year, if that doesn't change, nothing changes. And that's why I'm saying either one or two on your list, might even be one. Number one, you have to bring in a goalie to challenge Mikko Koskinen for the starting job. And that might even be number one, Bruce, on the list of things to do.
Because it's frustrating that's number one right after you sign your goalie to a 3-year extension for eight figures.
Do you think it's number one? Do you think I'm way out there on that?
I don't know. I'm just saying it's frustrating. When you sign the guy to an extension, it's because you think you found the solution, not that you instantly need to shore up the position with some other guy. Because they don't have a lot of spending money.
That's so Oilers. Oilers. Just like the lack of puck movers on the blue line. That is so Oilers that all these years later, having gotten rid of puck mover after puck mover after puck mover after, we're still looking for puck moving defensemen. There's so many things that are so Oilers. That's why they got to fire that front office. They just got to go in there,
The culture that needs to change is in people wearing suits and ties.
Guys who got rid of all those puck moving defensemen who were in on those decisions year after year after year, and just got it wrong. And then it was the guys who brought in Manning and Petrovic. They got to go. And you know, Nicholson said, "Well, I'm not going to make that decision myself. I'm going to." Why not, man? If you've been there, this long, you can see this. Just get rid of him now and clear the deck. He could do that, but I guess I'm contradicting myself because I'm saying the hockey operations guy should make the hockey decision. So I'll back off that comment. I really do believe that's true. So
he contradicted himself though at one point. He said something about a 99%.
Yeah.
About some people signings. Coming back. And I'm sort of saying, yeah, I thought you were the guy that was stepping aside from that role. And now you're talking about expectations of 99%.
Well, he could have been talking about scouts that Keith Gretzky was going to hire. Like maybe they have, I don't know, like if Keith Gretzky isn't going to be the hockey operations GM, and I don't think he is actually. My reading of that press conference is Gretzky's not going to be the GM, but he's got a plan and he's going to work with the new guy and he's going to keep running amateur scouting and maybe take over pro scouting. And what they're talking about is scouts that Keith Gretzky's 99% sure he's going to sign or 100% sure that he's going
to
sign.
Well, I got to sign some pro scouts. That whole area of this operation has been a disaster for years, David. They just have done a poor job of identifying and bringing in talent that's going to help. And I mean, you can go back to 2011, that fateful day when they signed all of Ben Eager and Darcy Hordichuk and Eric Belanger and Cam Barker. Remember that fateful day where we were filling in our veteran depth on the team and they basically struck out on all the projections of what those guys were going to be able to do.
Eric Belanger, Benoit Pouliot and Mark Fain.
You can go right through from then till now and you'll find millions of examples of guys that came in here and did not perform up to what they expected and hardly any examples of guys that overperformed.
I think that were existing pros.
I'm not talking about amateurs, but I'm talking about guys acquired from elsewhere in the league or even from, you know, European pros for that matter.
Okay, here's my take. I think that the Oilers have had the worst, and you could probably prove this, the worst amateur scouting from 1985 to 2015 in the NHL for that 30-year period. I bet you they had the worst value for draft picks of any NHL team. The pro scouting, I think, is a more recent development. I think under Kevin Lowe, and even under Sather, they had the ability, because those two guys were pretty sharp, and they had the ability then to identify some players, pro players, and bring them in and get some good value out of them. I mean, Kevin Lowe built a team that was within one game of winning the Stanley Cup, and he made all those moves. He made a lot of really good moves, a lot of really good trades. He was pretty sharp in making trades. The problem with the Oilers is, like, Kevin Lowe gets a lot of heat. The problem is actually when he decided to semi-retire and not – really make the decisions, but kind of make the decisions, have a say in them, and then have someone else calling him. I mean, that was an utter disaster. He should have just gotten out of the picture completely. Someone else should have taken over completely. Anyway, but so the pro scouting thing has been a disaster for about 10 years.
That's fair. Certainly this last entire decade. I mean, I gave you 2011, and I'm sure we could find examples since of, you know, signings that just didn't pan out. Of proven players, you know, I mean, Andrew Ferentz, and you mentioned Fain and Pouliot and
Belanger.
And any trades, I mean, winning trades, few and far between.
Nikita Nikitin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can you one-up me, Bruce?
Huh?
Can you one-up me on that one?
On Nikita Nikitin? I'm not sure if I can. I do know they brought in in 2013, during the 2 years of McTavish as GM, they brought in all of Nikitin, Fain, and Ferentz.
Well, Milan Lucic, of course.
Yeah.
One-ups them all. It's because of the consequences. Yeah. And then there's Curtis Foster. Was it Curtis Foster? I always got his name wrong, that defenseman. Mm-hmm. He couldn't play. He was terrible. Mm-hmm. Nikolai Habibulin.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, they're... So whoever, unfortunately, whoever comes in to clean up the mess. They're left with the smoking embers of the of some of these contracts and cap obligations and so on. It's not going to be an easy job. He's not going to have a lot of loose change to be going out to be buying players, and it's not an easy job now to get rid of rancid contracts.
Ryan Spooner, Kyle Brodziak, Mark Letesti worked out for a little bit, but Tobias Reeder, Brandon Manning. It's just endless. It is absolutely and utterly endless. And it's just like Gregor said, I think, on his broadcast the other day that they've already gotten rid of the two guys, Massier and Kachaki, or who are their two scouts. And I think he said they're not coming back, if I'm not mistaken. He's 99% sure. Maybe he framed it that way. Yeah. And he also said that I don't know who he was talking to. It sounded like he was talking with Nicholson off the record. That for the first time, Gregor said that he thought that real changes were coming. And real changes mean probably McTavish and Housen, right? Like, I mean, these are the two people that have been around, and Sutter. So those people may all just say, thank you for your service, time to move on. And, I mean, from Brian Burke, we hear that it's often the job of the assistant GM to negotiate the contracts. Right? Like they do, like that's not what the GM does. That's often assigned to someone else. Well, whoever negotiated the cost get in deal, for instance, thank you, bye, so long.
Well, I can tell you that the four players they traded for during the season this year, Chris Weidman, Ryan Spooner, Brandon Manning, and Alex Petrovich, between the four of them, all experienced pros, they played a total of 35 games for Edmonton. Here they averaged like 9 games each. The most was Manning, who played 12 games. Like, none of them helped at all.
Maybe I got to give Gretzky some credit. Like, if it was me, I would have had Jones, Benson, Marody, and Bear in the lineup. I just would not have. And I was writing this all year long too. Like,
January. This was a regular feature on our podcast too, David. I have to say.
So maybe they were right. Like, I probably was wrong. Like, maybe it's good to keep them out of this mess. But man, I would have not avoided that temptation, because those guys were already ripping it up down there. But it's probably best in the long run that they stayed down. I'll give them that. I think it was probably best. I just wanted them to try something, do something. And
there has to be space for some of those guys next year. Like, but as we discussed already, rather than pin expectations on one guy, just leave openings for some young players on affordable contracts, as opposed to going out and getting a 26 or 27 year old with an extremely limited upside and saying, you do it, because you're just not going to improve.
Well, the other thing is, Bruce, Kirill Maximov and Ryan McLeod are going to be in Bakersfield next year.
They need a place to play.
As are Samarukov and Bouchard, and maybe Joel Pearson. Listen, those guys shouldn't be playing in the bottom six in the AHL. They should be playing in the top six in the AHL, just like Benson got the chance and Marody did. There was a spot there, and they seized it. But, there has to be movement from Bakersfield. And if you're not planning for it, this is what this overripe stuff, like, we're going to have Benson in the AHL next year. Like, no, that doesn't make sense. You shouldn't be saying that. The plan should be that four of these guys need to compete, and the two winners, they get the final rose, and the final rose ceremony here on the Oilers. Yeah. Let's leave it there, Bruce. Well,
at least they got the front line talent down there this year, and that was one thing that Chiarelli kind of fixed. And there was a huge gap, because in both 2014 and 2015, they traded away all of their draft picks except the first rounder. Remember, they had nothing left in the second or third round in either of those 2 years in a row. And so there was nothing coming out of junior to replenish the AHL team. And then of course the NHL screwed the Oilers out of the two picks for McClellan and Chiarelli, which I'm still like, that was just brutal. And that created also contributed significantly to the void of young talent that was emerging at the minor league level. So they got catching up to do there.
They got Bent Aki Gustafsson on those two transactions. And
Just brutal.
I wonder what the alternate history of the Edmonton Oilers if Bent Aki Gustafsson had been with the team.
I think they would have won a few Stanley Cups if they had. Oh, wait, they did.
He was a really good hockey player.
He was.
Maybe Yari Curry wouldn't have got a chance. Who knows? You never know how it's going to turn out. All right, Bruce, thanks for talking today. Let's leave it there. Yeah. If you have anything else, I rambled on plenty.
Yeah, I know I rambled on and already enough, but we'll have things to talk about over the course of this off season, long 6 month off season. Oh,
bro, the season is not over, Bruce. We got Bakersfield coming up, man. We could have 2 months of hockey here to talk about.
The World Championships minus McDavid and Nugent Hopkins, but
yeah, I'm not that excited.
I guess Nuge is getting married, is what I heard.
Oh, okay. Good for the Nuge.
Yeah, so he's probably not going to the World. So
Nurse?
Maybe Nurse, probably Leon, undoubtedly Sekera, because Slovak is the host. There'll be a
Larson,
few guys.
Rockball, maybe?
Yeah.
Depending if they're healthy.
There'll be a few guys there. I'm not sure how much we're going to learn about any of them, though. Like, I always prefer when some of the younger guys get an opportunity.
And we have, if you're really keen, there's Evan Bouchard and Ryan McLeod currently kicking butt. Both of them. And Maximov has been hurt, but he's going to be back for his team. So there's, and Samarukov's team's going to be eliminated by, I think, Bouchard's team. But Bouchard's getting more than 2 points a game right now.
Fantastic.
And he's such a fantastically skilled hockey player. He just bottom pairing, power play minutes.
Yep.
He'll be in the running next year. After
exactly what they should have done with Justin Schultz.
Yeah. And they have the
power play, but don't put him in the top four and expect him to play 24 minutes a night right off the hop.
That's why part of me doesn't want to see Russell traded, because I think it's good to have that veteran one more year. So you don't have to then throw, you have the four veterans. They're not great. You know, Sekera, Russell. Well, you have the five, Nurse, Larson, and Klefbom. None of those guys are great NHL hockey players. I don't think they're good at best. But you have them, so that means you don't have to Justin Schultz, Evan Bouchard, or Joel Pettersson or Caleb Jones. So maybe that's the plan for next year. That's what I think.
Right. I think we could have a whole separate podcast about the plans for the defense or the options for the defense. So.
We will. All right. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, Bruce, for talking.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.